welcome to your weekly podcast, or whenever we get a chance to do it, at least, featuring me, Arlen Haro, and my co-pilot in this venture, Eric Sayor.
I haven't left the house in a month, 2 months, 3 years. Since I was born, who knows? I've lost all sense of time. It's bad.
It's like Kurt Russell in The Thing. Nobody trusts. yes. Yeah. So this is us doing the podcast during the quarantine still. Things have not gotten super bad. Not yet, at least.
No.
But we're still here.
So of course, as always. With a lot of free time, but also no free time at all, it feels like, at least for me.
Yeah, I'm getting that a lot from other people that I know. So, yeah.
I've started having the worst weird schedule imaginable, sleep schedule and work schedule as well. So it's bad. Like I take five to eight naps in the afternoon and then go back to work. It's really weird. It's like I have breakfast at night. I have a dinner at 6 a.m. It's bad.
I'm
exaggerating. It's not that bad, but it's pretty bad.
No, even the non-exaggerated version of that is, yeah, that's weird. That's, oof, yikes.
It's been harder finding time to watch movies, like whole movies. Mm-hmm. Except on the weekend, I try to watch more stuff, but like during the week, it's been like working, and when I'm not working, I'm not like taking 2 hours to watch a film because I need to get back to work, but time goes by. It's weird. Yeah. It's bad.
Yeah.
Working, I don't think I am meant for work from home for that long.
Yeah, I guess I'm having a similar thing where there was a week there where I think my attention was degrading so badly that I couldn't even sit through an entire film just because I couldn't, and I wasn't going outside at all, and that was not a good idea. Started doing that, and that helped. It helped refocus my attention. Started playing video games that I've already played before because I needed to mix things up.
Yeah, I played all of Breath of the Wild again, like 100 hours of it in the last month. So that has been like good for me, like the thing that kept me like real sane, kind of like just an escape pure. And I tried the DLC and I played like 10 minutes of it, and then I'm like, I think I played enough of that game. And now I'm back to movies, which we're gonna talk about watching a bunch of stuff. Do you want to go first with something interesting you've been watching?
Yeah, sure. This is one that I think a lot of people might be interested in. Elijah Wood, a good man, I would say, at least artistically, always makes a lot of interesting choices. I'm always surprised by what he puts himself in. Produces a lot of good movies as well. Produced Mandy, of course, Color Out of Space, which also came out recently, which I don't think we talked about, but we should. I don't know if you've seen that one yet.
No, but I'll watch it soon, and we can talk about it then. But
that'll be a good time.
It just didn't come out here for like months when it was out on iTunes in the US. Now it's out, so I'll get to it.
Yeah. But this is a movie that he is a star in. And I would have a hard time categorizing it in terms of genre. I guess like dark comedy, noir is probably the best that I could give it. At least that's what it turns into. And the plot is pretty simple. Elijah Wood gets a letter, or not Elijah Wood as in the person, but his character gets a letter asking him to come to his father's house, which is out in the middle of the wilderness. He hasn't seen his father in years. He didn't really grow up with him. And they're very much estranged. So he gets there and things are tense because they're different generations and they haven't really talked to each other. He is sort of that gruff, grumbly, you know, person who's just not very approving of his life decisions, him, his character being a DJ and a producer. His father being, I can't remember his exact job or it, but it's something very, workman like, I think it was like a driver or something. So they do not necessarily get on well and things devolve. Their relationship sort of, explodes and he starts to learn stuff about his father and who his father is and, starts to see his life in a different way. Because of things that he finds out. And I can't really go into too many spoilers about it, but I'll say that it gets weird around the halfway mark. And it just never stops being weird. Have you heard about this movie, or have you heard a lot of
it? I've heard about it from you. It's defined here as a comedy. Is it funny, or is it like just weird?
It's weird. It is funny. Like they're very much jokes. I would describe it as it's almost British in terms of its comedy. And it makes use of a lot of British actors. And they're doing very like dry comedy. I don't want to say it's Coen Brothers-esque because it's not as whimsical. It's more like a Guy Ritchie kind of comedy. But I don't even know if that's close. But it's got a weird cast. For example, if I can find his name. Let's see.
It feels in line with like Elijah Wood's last few movies. Movie, actually, because I think this is his first movie in 2 years, and then 2 years before that for his last project, the Netflix film I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, which was another film that kind of feel like it fits what you're describing, like a kind of weird comedy thriller with people out of their depth, probably less supernatural than compared to that. I don't know how far it goes, but seeing it on Shudder makes me guess that it's at least a bit, there's something there.
It actually stays pretty grounded.
Okay.
But it's like it goes places. There's a lot of over the top violence sort of towards the end of the movie. And it's got like a weird like 70s jazz score. That's the best word that I can use to describe it. It's just got a weird tone and a weird energy to it. It's just a good movie. I highly recommend it. Again, I can't go into too much detail stuff, but it's a good watch. Definitely worth a rent. And it was, and I should mention that it was like $7 in US cash to rent it. that was a big price, but I was completely okay with it after watching it. That's really my first.
That sounds interesting. I saw it like on iTunes and stuff, and I was curious, but it's nice to hear it's good. I'll look into it. I haven't been watching anything real new. The newest movie I watched was is a Canadian film called The 20th Century. Which I don't know if you've heard anything about it. It's a very Canadian movie in every aspect, but also like it's like kind of a like all the characters in this movie are Canadian political figures from the early 20th century. But it's like retold like they were all alive together. It's about a young man that's his name Mackenzie King after the prime minister, and is feels like he's destined to become prime minister in a But it's all shot in a very Lynchian way. Some like German expressionism in there. It's all feels like real weird. There's a lot of like a, it reminds me a lot of like Brazil, but also like Brazil is the movie that came to mind, but it's even more it's like shot in 4:3 and it's like oh, it's very grainy, the camera use, the effects use. It has like this old VHS vibe that you're watching kind of like you're watching an edutainment thing that was made for TV, but it's it, and it does like play with Canadian politics in a completely insane way. Like none of these characters are portraying who they really are and their real politics, but also like it does have like a lot of commentary on like historical Canadian politics. And it's just like a weird funny thing to watch. Like it you just get like a some like weird French Canadian characters and some weird like there's this weird like Quebec City and Toronto thing, and there's like a there's a Quebec movement for peace that's led by Tarte, which is a Canadian politician, but who's played by a woman with a mustache, and there's a lot of men playing women and women playing men. It's all very like weird, and you get like some 1984 style dictator speeches. It's like a real weird experience, but also it's like it's a very good movie. It's one of the best things I've watched recently. Kind of made like a friend talked to me about it like a year, like a few months ago when it came out in theaters, that he went with all his like film school buddies, and like most of them didn't like it, but he really did. Because and we have like kind of similar weird the style of movie taste, and it just like resonated with me really well. So, you're seeing some screens of it.
Yeah, I'm looking at images of it, and it looks kind of wacky. It you said like edutainment. It feels like something that you would see on PBS here, like a weird distorted kid show. The other frame of reference I had is like old Doctor Who, very overexposed and bright lights. It looks fascinating. I might have to check that out.
It has like some super weird elements. Like he gets horny by smelling boots. So he goes to a doctor to reprogram him so he can be a real politician, and they put a belt under his pants that will start ringing like an alarm if he has an erection, thinking of boots. It's very weird and completely outlandish, and it's like and it's still like kind of interesting how it presents stuff. I'm really curious what you'll think about it and like what questions you'll have after watching it.
Yeah, I imagine I would have a couple. I'm definitely gonna look into this. I'm gonna figure out a way to watch this because, wow, that.
Yeah, it's a real interesting work. It opened at TIFF last year, I think, and got like real good reviews. But yeah, it's a real Canadian thing. Like it went through like every reference. Is there like there's a like a at some point it's some characters get recruited to fight for the English in the Boer Wars in the end of the 19th century. So there's like all these events that are kind of mashed together, but also none of them are like real.
Yeah, I have a trailer playing in the background, and a man just kissed a shoe, open tongue. I'm like, I need to see this. I need to.
It's great. It's really good.
Okay, that's great. I haven't even seen it, and I'm gonna highly recommend this because that looks amazing. Fantastic. If we did winners, I would say that that's already a winner. Because that looks like something. I feel like I have a good transition here from a movie about one former British colony to a movie about another former British colony. I watched Peter Weir's film Gallipoli, which is about the Gallipoli campaigns in part. And that's sort of an infamous Australian part of World War One, and New Zealand, of course. But that's not really what the movie is about. If you go in just based off that title, you assume it's going to be like a big war movie with a lot of battles. And maybe not a lot of focus on the characters outside of maybe a main one or two. But this is a movie that's like really about two individuals who just end up being there at Gallipoli. The focus really isn't on the war. And I realized that after watching it, that it's actually like an anti-war film. That was the purpose of it. And yeah, it's interesting. It stars Mel Gibson, who we all know recently on this show. And it's definitely pre-Road Warrior Mel. Looking, as we, I believe we said, very handsome at that time. Mark Lee, I think, is the name of the other actor who is really the lead. It's sort of a two-hander there. But they play two Australians. Mel plays sort of like a streetwise city Australian. And Mark Lee plays like an outback kid. And the reason that we follow these two characters is that they are both semi-professional or in-training runners. That's one of them's dream is to be a runner. And he goes into the Australian military because that's specifically what he wants to do. He wants to deliver messages. And actually, he goes in to join the cavalry as well. And the two of them sort of become bonded by doing a race, like a semifinals regional race there. And Mel loses to the Mark Lee character. And they sort of form a fast friendship. And it just explores their friendship as they go from being recruits or from trying to join the military and not being allowed to because one of them's not of age, being kicked out for any number of other reasons, finally getting in, not being sent into the same brigade, getting put into the same brigade when they're seen doing an impromptu race to the pyramids, to the Great Pyramids, once they find themselves in Egypt. And it's really just about these two and their like bromance that they have before the ending of the film. I won't spoil what happens, but it ends on a very tragic note. And I'm really saying this because I want to warn people, as I warned people on an episode of The Phantom Zone that hasn't come out yet, that it's not going to be like an uplifting film if you haven't seen it before. It's kind of a heart-wrenching movie. It kind of broke me for the rest of the day. I was doing like a Peter Weir marathon there. And I was like, no, Peter, you hurt me. I can't do this right now. But it was a nice experience while I was in it. And it does tell me that I should have been watching Peter Weir movies before this because he's a good filmmaker. And when his handling of character is there, it's something interesting. His movies can be a little bit artsy or they can be a little bit dry in some parts. But I think when he's at his best, he's very strong. I guess watch Gallipoli if you don't feel bad about it. Because of the whole male thing, which we've discussed before, but are you interested in it?
Yeah, he's a filmmaker that I've always like been interested in, but haven't watched more than Dead Poets Society, which mm-hmm. a high school classic.
Yeah,
even here when like in English class we get to see that movie. A really good movie. Robin Williams at his best.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like even like Master and Commander is a movie I always hear talk about, but I never got to it. So like he's a filmmaker I want to explore more, and this sounds like interesting, like a war movie that isn't really centered around raw war, but the characters around it. Sounds like my kind of thing, but I don't know if I can do tragic right now.
Yeah, I can see that. That's why it was kind of unexpected, because it just came out of nowhere. But there were parts of it where I was like, okay, this is interesting, because for me, you know, a perspective that is so based in the perspective of the time, like it's very Australian, much in the same way that the 20th century sounds very Canadian. This has a sort of a similar thing to it, where I felt like I was getting perspectives that were preserved from real Australians from the time of, like, how did people in the outback feel about World War One? Did they care? And that was an interesting thing for me to get, because I don't know. Did Australians care? Did they have a feeling that they needed to be involved in the war? And you get sort of part of that. You have Mel Gibson's father in the movie. His character is somebody who was kicked out of Ireland during all the stuff that I can't go into now about Irish history. And he still has like a grudge against British military and the Queen and all that. So like there's all this different stuff about Australian history. And political stuff that's very interesting to me. And so, yeah, it's there for that. But like you said, I understand if anybody is like, I can't do heart emotional stuff right now, or anything super heavy. So, yeah.
Well, if you don't want to do, we still want to stay with an Australian director and don't want to go on the heavy side, I've got a film for you. I continued my George Miller exploration and watched The Witches of Eastwick, an 80s movie, very 80s movie of directed by George Miller, we've talked about, and starring Jack Nicholson as the devil, and Cher, Susan Sarandon, and Michelle Pfeiffer as three witches, in the most perfect cast ever, maybe.
Yeah, here you said, I'm like, how have I not seen this movie from beginning to end? I've never actually sat down and done it, but wow, like, that combination is like, I should be there. I should be watching it right after this, because
it's something. Like, it does feel like he's kind of maybe out of his depth doing something that, like, completely out of his comfort zone, from going from Mad Max to this. Mm-hmm. But the casting is perfect, and the movie is completely off the walls. It's super funny. It's very kind of sexual in a way, because you have Jack Nicholson playing the devil, and playing like a very horny devil, but a very like like seducing, but in a way that you don't like that you'll be seduced by him, but you accept it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
so he basically seduces three women. Three women are having drinks, and they're like, basically summon a perfect husband by talking about like, he has to be nice and listen to me talk, and also his penis has to be not too big, but not too small, but with a curve, something like that. Like, explicitly mentioning his penis before and then after having sex with him. It's real, like, something else. Like, from that era, something that's so openly sexual and openly, like, but also comedic and, like, funny and ridiculous. It also it has a our good friend Peter Strickland from Twin Peaks fame, where he plays the fireman, but also from Gerald's Game, where he plays the Moonlight Man.
Oh yes, yes, yeah.
He plays a manservant for Nicholson named Fidel, and he's just like basically plays like a proto lurch in it.
Fantastic. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. It's a super fun time. It's real good. I not real good maybe, but it's like just a great time. I'd say it has its highs, and it's just like a very fun, enjoyable movie that goes by. Like, if you want something for a fun afternoon, that's it. Like, it's great. And now I've reached a point where the next George Miller film is Lorenzo's Oil, which I heard is super depressing. Yeah. So I think I'm going to skip that one and go straight to Babe. And then maybe one day come back to it. But it's like, I can't do a movie about like a sickness that's unknown. And like a child getting a sickness. Yeah, I can't do that right now. So... look forward to hearing me talk about Babe and Big Pig in the City next time.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be fun. fantastic. Yeah, I'm gonna watch this. You reminded me that I should definitely get on that.
Yeah. It doesn't go as far into the witchiness as I think you like in your witches movies, but I think it's like the best portrayal of the devil on screen. Only beaten maybe by Black Phillip.
Right. Yeah. Obviously. I mean, Jack Nicholson is the devil. I'm in. That does sound interesting. And it is Reagan 80s America. So the fact that there are witches in it, I'm shocked. Especially with Satanic Panic and all that stuff that was going on here. Yeah. That's something I'm gonna get to that when I can. Let's see. I think we can actually go into some of the Star Wars realm if you don't think it's too early.
Yeah, sure. I've been rewatching some Star Wars. I've been doing that for like months now. I just slowly going through everything, trying to structure in my head how I feel about the Star Wars. I kind of have a ranking now, which is interesting, but I still need to rewatch the... I want to rewatch Force Awakens and Last Jedi because it's been like a year or two, just to be sure, but I think I know how I feel about modern Star Wars now, which is like a weird to say. And I feel as bummed as I am by Rise of Skywalker, I'm kind of excited for once about Star Wars. Yeah. I'm kind of excited again. I mean, but yeah, rewatching Solo and Rogue One. Rogue One, I know, is your favorite, probably one of your favorite Star Wars movies.
Yeah, it's up there for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember you liking it a lot more than me when it came out.
Yeah, I remember enjoying it, but I think for me it was, I wanted a Star Wars movie that didn't remind me too much of Star Wars. Like, I was very much into the idea of Star Wars not being within this one specific bubble of creative energy. And I do feel as if there was a drastic correction by Lucasfilm, because they really haven't explored since Solo came out, the other film that you rewatched. So yeah, that movie, I think it just hit in a very specific place for me, and I've rewatched it since, and I've recalibrated a little bit, but the parts of it that were very much my thing, just like specifically made for me, I still very much enjoyed. But I know that you sort of, your opinion seemed to shift quite a bit, though, from what I could tell.
In my mind, I liked it. In my mind, I was disappointed when it came out. I had seen it just the once in theaters, like opening day, and I got out of it probably because because Force Awakens just like hit for me. Like, I got out of that movie being like completely in love with it. Like I just felt the perfect Star Wars I needed when it came out. I'm not as high on it as I was, but I still really, really like that movie. I really love it. But yeah, so Rogue One just didn't work for me on that end. So I felt like kind of disappointed, and I think I just needed that space from it to just reevaluate how I felt about it. And it hit. Like, I really liked rewatching it. It felt like a really good Star Wars movie, and just a really good movie in general. Except my hot take, which we discussed on Twitter. But I think that movie is better without the Vader scenes. At least the Vader scene in the middle. I think the Vader scene at the end works a lot better if you're not like ready. You haven't seen Vader yet. That scene in the middle felt just like a last minute addition and kind of useless. Very fan servicey. Like, you want the crowd to cheer two times, and this is the two times they see Vader.
Yeah. I still feel like it serves too much of a purpose. I would say it's maybe not placed in the right like, that's what I found when I rewatched it recently. It's like, this could have gone a little bit earlier, and I don't think it would have hurt anything. I'm still more bothered by like the CGI Leia that we didn't need to see.
Oh yeah.
That was more for me. But I do agree with you that like ending on Cassian and
I think the best ending for that, if you want the tightest ending for that movie, is to end on the explosion while they're holding hands on the beach, and you have but I think also that's what I thought after finishing it, and then maybe thinking about it more. I think you need that scene where they receive the message. Maybe if you put it before, then you end the movie on that, and you cut that Vader scene in. Because honestly, what that Vader scene felt like to me, it felt like one of like a George Lucas scenes that he kind of inserted in his old movies. It felt like out of place like that. Like, it shows that it's a different director. It shows that it's like a. They needed to add something just to make people like that movie more. Well, I think it works. It works at its best with those characters, and it does make me more excited for that TV show to come out.
And just to reiterate on the whole Vader thing, I do agree that like it does feel fan servicey, but I think that. The purpose that it does serve that I don't think is actually illustrated in the original trilogy, and it makes me like the original trilogy a little bit more, is the sense of how much Vader was like, he was a deal. He was a big deal. He was part of why things were going the way that they were going. He is something, he's the kind of figure that you can send into a situation that will just completely sway things. And yeah, you can make that assumption from what we saw in the prequels, but I think for some people it just doesn't click in your head how scary Vader is. And I don't know, I thought that was an important thing to show you that the Empire is not something to be messed with. They were a very scary thing, and I feel like that scene, it only helps to illustrate that. And I think that if that was already properly illustrated, or if the movie had already done that well enough, maybe it wouldn't be necessary. But I think that it's an additive enough that I didn't feel that it was unnecessary fan service. Unnecessary fan service to me in that movie in particular is like, I can't remember their names, but the dude who gets his hand cut off in the bar on Tatooine, we didn't need that guy to show up, or his friend I can't remember the name of the moon, Jedha, I think.
Yeah, I didn't even realize those guys were there.
You didn't even notice that they were there, but they are there, and I didn't need that. And like as much as I enjoy the idea of Vader being kind of a sarcastic person and still having jokes, I don't think it was necessary. It did feel like Disney really wants to cash in on Vader. yeah. in that scene in particular.
I just think it diminishes the final scene.
Mm-hmm.
I've been like kind of listening to a commentary with one of the writers and seeing like how much that movie evolved from one writer to the next, because it went mm-hmm. through like six or something. Yeah. It's very interesting. All the fixer guys like McCreary and like other guys like him that just come in and fix ships all went through it. It's a interesting weird movie. How it got taken also from Gareth Edwards. It's not the only movie. It came out real better than the other movie that was taken from its directors. Because I also rewatched Solo, and I remember us talking about Solo when it came out, and me being kind of high on it, and now I'm not. Oh no, that movie's bad. I didn't like that thing at all. I think like watching Star Wars in theater just like makes me like a movie too much. Like as much as I kind of was down on Rogue One coming out, just kind of disappointed a bit. I was way too high on that movie coming out of it.
I haven't had a chance to rewatch this since the theater. I just remember being like, okay, that was a movie that I saw, but I didn't care about it. It is curious to hear you say though that you did not like it.
Also, I've rewatched like most of the Star Wars movies recently. I think there was a long time before watching Solo the first time that I had to watch the original trilogy. So I think that Han Solo kind of felt okay in my mind, and now it just doesn't. Like he's better when he's playing like his own thing than when he's being Han Solo. And as good as Lando is, the Lando is in that movie, it's not. It doesn't save it. And I got out of it and I was like, yeah, I'd watch another movie with those characters. And I feel like I'm not totally wrong on that, but I think it needs to be way more interesting than what that is. It needs to be like a real different story. I think now we know they're never going to touch that again. And I'm kind of okay with that. I do feel bad for Alden Ehrenreich, because he's great in Hail Caesar. I think he does an okay job in Solo. Like there's scenes where I'm like, yeah, this there's like a moment in Solo where he takes over the Millennium Falcon and he's flying, and then Chewie sits next to him, and you're like, okay, if that was the and the Star Wars theme is playing, if that was the one big fan service-y moment, and you didn't have to explain everything else, and you just got that moment there, I would have been happy with that, because I was like all in for that instant, and then you get some weird like big tentacle monster and stuff like that. It's a weird movie. Like introduces like a whole new movie like three times.
It kind of starts over multiple times. And thinking about it, there's some stuff in it that I'm still not really a fan of. Not really a fan of how they did L3. That's not great. Stuff they do with her character. I'm just thinking about it now, and I'm like, I do not care for this movie. Maybe I didn't like it then, and I was being nice to it because I wanted to be nice to Star Wars. I don't know. I feel like it would be better if it wasn't about characters that we know at all. Kind of what you were getting at there just a little bit. Like, if Han and Lando were supporting characters, and this was about another person, another sort of scoundrelish character, and we were learning about someone brand new, I think it would be far more interesting. because then the characters that we already know are just flavoring. They're just there to add to this other character and to give that character something to do. And it still grows the universe rather than trying to give like all this unnecessary explanation to Han as a person.
Like if it was a heist movie centered around another character and then you get that one scene where Han is part of the team and kind of just leaves like Lando does in the movie, and then that's it. And then you continue with your character, and it's more centered around the rebellion and stuff like the rebellion part that they introduced like 30 minutes from the end. It's like it's a really bad structured movie, and I think like. I think it could have would have maybe been a better movie if like Ron Howard had made all of it.
Or the original directors had made all of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Way or the other. Because honestly, I don't think Ron Howard's a bad director at all. Like, I think he's more.
At his worst, he makes boring movies sometimes.
At his worst, he makes movies that are like really boring, but. Like every director has a strength. He's very good at casting. So like it's a boring movie, but like at least Tom Hanks is there or somebody that you do find interesting. So he can like keep you on for a little bit. I think that there are moments in this movie from my memory that do feel kind of eh. And it's weird the things that have survived from this movie in terms of pop culture. Like when this movie comes up, inevitably it turns to isn't it so dumb that Darth Maul showed up, or isn't it so great that Darth Maul showed up, and like that's the end and beginning of conversation a lot of the time when this movie comes up in conversation for me.
It's kind of a messy movie. I it's weird that it exists. It feels like the modern equivalent to like those Ewok movies that no one talks about. It's gonna be the modern Star Wars that no one's gonna talk about in years, when there's gonna be like 5 more Star Wars movies.
I think it's gonna they're like an Incredible Hulk with the MCU. Like it's just gonna be nobody's gonna think about it. It's gonna be,
yeah.
People do rankings and they don't even bring that movie
out. It is in my ranking. It's low, but it's there.
Right. Well, for a while it was like, it'd be like the lowest or it would be second lowest. I'm seeing people just like forgetting that it exists now. And it's just Iron Man 2 down there at the very bottom all by its lonesome and nothing else.
If you care, I'm going to give my Star Wars rankings because now that I have one, I want to say it somewhere. So number one, Star Wars. Number two, Empire. Number three, Last Jedi. Number four, Force Awakens. Number five, Return of the Jedi. Number six, Rogue One. Number seven, Phantom Menace. Number eight, Solo. Eight, Revenge of the Sith. 9, Solo. 10, Rise of Skywalker. And the bottom, Attack of the Clones.
I don't disagree with any of that. The only thing I have a problem with is I never have the same opinion on the prequels on the day.
Yeah.
Like, if you ask me tomorrow, my prequels ranking would change completely. But Sith will usually be higher than the other two. It's just in reference to other movies, where will it be?
Having rewatched the three, I had this idea in my mind that Sith was not as bad, but it's as bad. Yeah. Like, I like Phantom Menace probably the best, because I think that... That the Duel of the Fates is the best thing in all of the prequels by far. And the Obi-Wan Anakin fight, which I thought was good, in my mind is awful. It's really bad.
Yeah, I just thought of like, where if you were to put Mandalorian in your ranking, where is Mandalorian?
Mandalorian is probably after Rogue One.
That's fair. That's
like, Rogue One is like my last of the good ones. So Mandalorian is like that last good one, and then you have the Phantom Menace, which is like the best of the bad. I think my favorite of the bad. And then Revenge of the Sith, Solo, Rise of Skywalker, which is garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Attack of the Clones, which is also garbage.
Yeah, no, those are awful films. Like, I can't say it enough. Like, the prequels are bad, but like, I think Rise of Skywalker might be the most incompetent movie I've ever seen, made by people who shouldn't be that incompetent. I don't understand it. Like, it's a mystery to me more than it makes me angry. Like, I don't understand how, you know, like, these things happen occasionally. Like, Gore Verbinski making The Lone Ranger and that movie being whatever that movie is, you know, occasionally this happens where somebody who otherwise has every ability in the world or has displayed that they can make a good movie, just making something that is not even watchable or interesting. Rise of the Skywalker is just like boring. I found it boring on my second watch, and I did not expect that. but it was
I saw it twice in theaters, and that second time, I just spent most of my time trying to enjoy like the craft of it, because the story, I'm not gonna enjoy it that. And it has Babu Frick, so that's like why I like it more than Attack of the Clones.
I perked up when Babu came back on screen. I really like Carrie Russell. She was cool for 5 minutes. The rest of the movie doesn't quite meet her level. And as I said back when it came out, Jodie Comer's one scene was her one frame of the movie was okay, cool, also. I keep thinking back to how they timed it so that an episode of their show would somehow make the movie better. And I think it only backfired because people zero in on the healing of the snake.
No one, like, everyone that I watched it with, like, no one knew about the healing before. Like, no one was watching Mandalorian. Like, people were watching Mandalorian, but, like, I know, like, in the US, a lot of people got Virgin, that got Disney Plus through Virgin, but here, I was probably the only person I knew around when Rise of Skywalker came out that had Disney Plus. And we've talked about Mandalorian on the show, and I think it's like maybe a good way to move on to what's going to happen with Star Wars. But I think it's a show that's helped a lot by comparison, like comparing to the Star Wars that came before and the Star Wars that came after. It's incredible. But it's like, it's an okay show. Like it's good because it's Star Wars, I think. I think if it wasn't, it's a show that would have like died and no one would care, because I don't think it has the level of quality that people give it credit for. You like more, because I think like also some episodes were really good and some episodes just like don't land.
I'm very much on that sort of level right now with Mandalorian, where I think people forgave the episodes that weren't as good because of Star Wars. I think that's a show that they could have afforded to not have as many episodes. Or it could have been written better. I think that they have a lot of room to improve. And it's interesting. I usually don't watch as many behind the scenes stuff anymore, because behind the scenes stuff is very cleaned up, sanitized compared to when I was much younger. But I have been watching Disney Plus's sort of behind the scenes thing that they're doing specifically for The Mandalorian right now. I assume that the next season's going to be about, I don't know, another season of some other show, or perhaps Falcon and the Winter Soldier when that comes out. But right now it's just The Mandalorian, and it's interesting to watch them try to like talk about each other. They specifically did like a director's roundtable, and that just like crystallized for me. Oh, maybe we shouldn't have let Bryce Dallas Howard's first directorial thing be Star Wars. Nothing against her personally, and not that her episode was horrible, but it's not great.
The Seven Samurai episode?
Yeah, right? She did that one, which is fine.
It's not the worst episode of the show.
It's not. No, I actually think Famuyiwa's first episode is probably the weakest. If I had to pick one,
I think my least favorite is probably the one with Ming-Na Wen on Tatooine. Yeah. Yeah, that's just like a boring and useless episode. I think that Seven Samurai episode, the Bryce Dallas Howard one, does have like some interesting characterization for the Mandalorian in it. I think it does bring some stuff to the show. I think that episode brings nothing.
Yeah. No, you're right. That one is like. Like, I watched it twice because I wasn't sure if it was good and I needed to know if it was a bad episode or not. It's not. It's there for filler, I'm fairly sure. And also they wanted to give the stepdad in Ant-Man, they wanted to give his son an acting job. So they just... Jake Cannavale. Less of that one and more of the attack on the prison ship episode. More of that. More Space Boston, please.
Also, I think Dave Filoni is bad at directing live action. I'll say it. Like, he did the first episode, and that episode that we just talked about that was like kind of boring. I just don't think he's a good live action director. Maybe it's also his first stuff, so maybe in season two he'll do better things, but I think he's probably better in Star Wars as a writer than he is as a director.
In the case of that second episode, I feel like that was there to set up one of the pieces of news that we got, which was that Boba Fett will be appearing in the second season of The Mandalorian.
Yes.
There was a lot of Mandalorian news actually in this last week or so. Yeah, he's showing up. Katie Sackhoff as Sabine Wren. We've both seen Rebels. I just wanted to make
sure. No, I haven't seen Rebels. I'm still on Clone Wars.
not Sabine Wren. What's her character's name? Something. I can't remember her character's name, but Katie Sackhoff is reprising her voice character that I believe she's had since Clone Wars.
Rosario Dawson is coming as Ahsoka Tano.
Yes.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible casting first, and also like cool.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm happy about it because she's great. And again, Tamara Morrison is fantastic. I love that. It looks like they're doing a lot of interesting stuff. It's gonna fill in, I imagine, a lot of backstory about the Mandalorians, where characters from Clone Wars and Rebels were during the Purge that we heard about. I think that they're set up to do some more interesting stuff because that first season is out of the way, and a first season of a television show, they're usually messy. They're not often perfect. I feel like premium television is kind of given us the sense that that's how it should be, that they should be very clean and very well put together. And I'm excited to hear where they're going. My only problem with this all of this news is I would have preferred all of this to be a surprise. But at the same time, I think Star Wars has gotten to the point where they think the whole mystery box and keeping secrets from us maybe backfired on them a little bit. Maybe that's how they feel. I don't know. Do you think that that's part of why they're just like, let's just let them know right now, because I feel like that's reasonable to
assume. Yeah, I think that as long as they don't spoil the episode in advance, I'm fine with it. Like, just knowing that Ahsoka Tano is in one of the 8 episodes is, like, cool to know. And when she's going to show up, it's going to probably be surprising for that she shows up. Like, actually see her in live action.
I would assume they all get an episode and then they're all in the finale, probably. I don't know.
It's hard to say. It's hard to say what they're going to do with the Black Saber as well. There's a Black Saber reference in Rogue One, actually, which I found really interesting.
I didn't notice that.
The scene where they go at the end of the movie, when they go to like the data bank, and there's like all that information is in cassette tapes, kind of, which is incredibly cool. They go through the list, and the last thing they say, it's, oh, that's a plan for the Death Star, because that's her. That's what her dad used to call her. But one of the things they say is Black Saber, which I thought was a cool small reference. I'm excited to get to those Black Saber Clone War episodes, or Rebels, or whatever. I don't know which show, but yeah.
Yeah, Black Saber, it is in both. And that was part of my slip of saying Sabine Wren, who I feel will show up. Because she's heavily integrated into these characters. She's a Mandalorian, so it would make sense that we see her, or at least learn her fate. I'm interested to see what they do with this. Like I said, I think they have a lot of room to improve. So I think Mandalorian Season 2 has a lot of potential to be probably some of the best Star Wars that we've seen in very, very recent times.
Also very excited for the other shows. The most recently announced one from the Russian doll creator.
Yes.
Who's making a completely independent show that's not based around a character, which is exactly what I feel like I need right now. Leslie Headland. I don't know if we've talked about Russian. I think you convinced me to watch Russian Doll, maybe.
Sounds right.
That's a real good show.
Yes, it is.
I remember when I saw online the day they announced it that she was at the premiere for Star Wars movie for Force Awakens, maybe. Mm-hmm. And she was asked, like, would you like to, like, she was asked, I think in an interview, what do you want to do? What do you want to direct? And she said, like, Star Wars is the thing I absolutely want to do the most. I have a million ideas. So that makes me even more, like, she feels like the right choice. Mm-hmm. Considering there's that Cassian show that sounds interesting, and the Obi-Wan show, if it feels like it's like kind of that's the one that's in trouble, maybe that's not going as well as they would want.
Aside from the director being Deborah Chow, I don't have high hopes for that one.
Yes. I remember you talked about in the Phantom Zone that they hired a writer for a bad Zack Snyder movie or something.
The writer of Army of the Dead, the movie no one is excited for. I'm hoping that person falls off of it before they actually get into making it. I'm very excited about this Russian Doll creator, or one of the showrunners, because it'll be something different, which is kind of what I like. And if the spirit of Rogue One exists in the Disney Plus arena, then I'm fine with that, because I any franchise, any series, I like changing things up and there being a little bit, you know, of a different way of doing things. We'll talk about this when we do more of the Bond stuff, and if we get into sort of modern day news at some point, but I would like them to do a similar thing with Bond, and, you know, maybe consider doing other people and giving them shows or comics, video games, what have you, other forms of media. And that's, I think that's where Star Wars is kind of going. It seems like they recently announced that
Taika Waititi is directing the next movie.
Yes,
is that what you're?
I'm particularly talking about what's the game that recently came out that I'm forgetting.
Jedi Fallen Order.
It's going to be a full trilogy. They announced, and that they're also, as they said earlier, that they are working on other games as well. And they said, and Bob Iger said something to the effect of that he was interested in pursuing video games more. But I guess they confirmed that they will, in fact, be doing other games, and they are in development, which I'm sure every EA fan is very into. That was a joke because there are no EA fans. So that will be something. And then, like you said, Taika Waititi is he's going to be doing a Star Wars movie. I can't say I'm surprised. I feel like this was in the works for
that a while. He feels like the obvious guy now.
Mm-hmm.
To make a space thing, reboot after a contentious movie. The only thing that bothers me is maybe I kind of know how that his movie is going to feel like.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Because his movies tend to have that feel. I don't know. Maybe maybe I'm going to be surprised. He makes good. Thor Ragnarok is probably my favorite MCU movie. So I didn't like Jojo Rabbit as much. Hunt for the Wilder People is amazing. Mm-hmm. So it's probably going to be good Star Wars. I just hope it's like we said multiple times, it needs to be new. It needs to be completely out of the Star Wars we've seen. And that's when Mandalorian shines, really, when Rogue One does as well. I think it's when it's not something we've seen before.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's what I want. I want something that is particular to Taika's sensibilities. I think the reason that Thor Ragnarok worked so well is that it's not just him, it's also him and Chris and how much they clearly get along and how much their ideas are very much in sync. They clearly have a similar outlook on what Thor should be and how Thor should work. And I'm hoping that if Kathy Kennedy or whoever is going to be in charge going forward, if they are why he is getting this movie, that they understand that he needs the proper collaborators. Because I think that's when his movies work the best, when he's on the same page with the people he's working with. I would be interested to see him maybe challenge himself a little bit more, because, looking back on Jojo Rabbit, I think he kind of falls on some crutches a few times. Like, he kind of goes for comedy when he feels uncomfortable with how serious he is. And I think that's the thing that makes Hunt for the Wilder People work a little bit better. He doesn't do that as much. Like, he does allow himself to sit in it and allow the serious moment to be unimpeded. And I think a little bit close to that, if he's gonna do a serious Star Wars movie, if he's just gonna do a big goofy Star Wars movie, I have no problem with that. I know that there are some Star Wars fans who are like, it needs to have a certain balance. It needs to be such and such amount of serious and, so much comedy. But too funny is not what I want out of Star Wars. Like, whatever, just let the director do the movie that they want to make.
I feel like we're never going to get the Rian Johnson trilogy we both want. At this point, it feels kind of impossible, but maybe, who knows? I feel like he's the one director that worked with Lucasfilm and then just got to make what he wanted to make, and then they just kind of let him, and he worked well with the producer, with Kathleen Kennedy. So, Taika Waititi has shown that he can work with Disney well, and he's the rare director that came back to make another MCU movie.
Yeah.
Even Scott Derrickson recently didn't get to make the isn't making the second one. It's interesting that he's the one that knowing he's the one that's coming back makes a lot more sense. Even that he's the one they wanted to make a Star Wars movie. I do wonder if that's the Feige produced one. The Feige produced one, or if that's something else. I think it would make sense.
It would make a lot of sense if it's Feige sort of stepping in there and working on it. Was there other Star Wars news? Because I'm trying to rack my brain to see if there's anything else, but I can't think of anything else that came up.
No, I think that there's a new Clone Wars season. Have you watched it?
I haven't really watched. I watched Rebels because it just seemed like a easier thing to do. it just seemed much easier than, well, this story arc is not good and this story arc is okay, which is the large sense of what I had heard about it.
Everyone that's been watching the new Clone Wars season in my timeline is super excited about it, so that's made me get back to Clone Wars. But it goes slowly. It's a long show. I think that's it for
I think we can go to plugs.
I'll go first because mine are quick. Just follow me on Twitter. I'm at Isayer. I like to tweet. I tweet about the movies that I watch. And that's about it. Go listen to our James Bond miniseries. It's very good. It's like the most fun I think this show has been. It's always a good time.
Yeah, that's we're having a lot of fun with that. At least I know I am definitely having a lot of fun with that. So yeah, check it out if you haven't. If you're scared of the James Bond, give it a shot, because
you don't need to watch the movie. We go through the plot when we talk about the movies, and there are pretty, and you'll be surprised by how much insane stuff there are in those movies.
Do that. Invite friends over virtually through the internet to watch them with you. Have a drink. Have a good time. Then listen to our show as we talk about them. That's your show. That's your stuff. Phantom Zone podcast. We're sort of maybe going into sort of a light mode for a little bit, just some behind the scenes stuff. A lot of us do still have sort of regular jobs, so we might be lightening the load a little bit. But there will still be a show, so look forward to new episodes. An episode was recently recorded featuring Andy Seitz and I don't know what name he wants me to use, but Isayer. And that episode is something.
I need to listen to that.
I may be sending Eric an early release version in case he wants it, because it's out in a little bit and I will be plugging it for a while, but it's insanity. Look for that when it comes out. Other stuff come shortly, news episodes, all that stuff. I think that's it. Bye.
Fuck Rise of Skywalker.
Fuck that movie so hard.